You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the complex world of enterprise identity, securing legacy web apps at scale can be daunting. Strata Identity makes it simple. With Strata, you can effortlessly integrate non-standard apps with any identity service, like MFA or SSO, with zero coding and zero hassle. Designed by identity architects for identity architects, Strata works with every vendor, standard, and app architecture. This means your apps can now speak modern protocols and integrate seamlessly with your chosen identity services. From securing on-prem web apps to migrating away from outdated identity providers or consolidating them, Strata helps you keep your complex access policies as you modernize your identity infrastructure and get rid of technical debt. Join leading organizations like 3M, Dallas County, and CIBC in securing your apps with Strata. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your identity security priorities, and receive a complimentary pair of AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Connect today at strata.io/cyberwire. Update on the Code Cove supply chain attack. The Babak gang say they've debugged their decryptor. MI5 warns of industrial-scale catfishing in LinkedIn. Positive Technologies responds to U.S. sanctions. The U.S. stands down the two unified coordination groups it established to deal with the SolarWinds and exchange server compromises. Are all Five Eyes seeing eye to eye on China? Ben Yellen explains the legal side of the FBI removing web shells following the Microsoft Exchange server hack. Our guest is May Habib from Writer on how AI is helping the security industry with outdated and problematic terminology. And, by the way, your kitchen appliances are a bunch of sellouts or something. From the CyberWire studios at DataTribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Tuesday, April 20th, 2021. Reuters said late yesterday evening that the Code Cove supply chain attack may have affected several hundred of the software company's customers' networks, with other software development vendors attracting particular attention, along with companies that themselves have a large customer base. It's unclear whether the attackers are ordinary criminals or threat actors working on behalf of a nation state. Sometimes the hoods need good PR, too. In this case, the goons behind Babak have reached out to journalists, GovInfo Security among them, to say that they've fixed the buggy decryptor MSSoft researchers embarrassed the Babak gang about shortly after the attack on the Houston Rockets professional basketball team. MSSoft, which first noticed earlier this month that the Babak decryptor didn't work, is looking into the gang's claims to have fixed the problem. Skeptically, of course, since stumblebums have difficulty changing their skids. It's an odd sort of customer service problem. Your victims may not bother to even consider paying the ransom if the decryptor you send them is garbage. Britain's MI5 warns of widespread industrial-scale catfishing campaigns in progress over LinkedIn,
as espionage services approach government workers through fictitious profiles. At least 10,000 British personnel are thought to have been prospected, the BBC reports. There are a few lessons here. First, intelligence officers continue to try to recruit agents, and they often do so with a personal approach intended to gradually establish a relationship that will eventually induce the agents to do things they know better than to do. Today, that approach is more likely to be made online than it is IRL, as the kids say, and a catfish, a fictitious persona, is likely bait. So don't get hooked, and don't connect with people you've never encountered. And please, hold off on asking people you've never met to connect. You're just tossing more chum out there for the catfishers to hide their bait. Positive Technologies, the well-known Russian security firm sanctioned last week by the U.S. Treasury Department for what the U.S. government regards as excessive closeness to Russia's SVR and other intelligence organs, on Friday issued a statement characterizing Treasury's accusations as groundless. "Despite the fact that we are not a public company, the market evaluates our capitalization as high, several billion dollars," the company says, which as far as we can tell is true enough. Their statement adds, "This demonstrates the level of interest in our technologies and a serious level of trust in the company," which is also fair enough. "To maintain this trust," Positive Technologies says, "we adhere to the principles of maximum openness at all levels of our activities, from research to business, including the company's financial statements." And they point to their Positive Hack Days as an example of their open engagement with the global security community. The U.S. Treasury Department, for its part, sees Positive Hack Days as effectively recruiting events for the FSB and the GRU, occasions the Russian intelligence organs use to spot talent. Positive Technologies had been a partner in the Microsoft Active Protections Program, known as MAP, which is more evidence that the company had indeed enjoyed a good reputation in the industry. Redmond describes MAP as a program for security software providers that gives them early access to vulnerability information so that they can provide updated protections to customers faster. Positive Technologies is no longer a partner. Microsoft has, Security Week reports, removed them. The U.S. government has decided to stand down the task forces established to deal with the SolarWinds incident attributed to Russia and the Microsoft Exchange server compromise attributed to China. Deputy National Security Advisor for Cyber Neuberger says, quote, "Due to the vastly increased patching and reduction in victims, we are standing down the current UCG surge efforts and will be handling further responses through standard incident management procedures," end quote. The U.S. will maintain what Neuberger describes as a whole-of-government approach to these incidents and others that may emerge. She cites four lessons learned from the response to the SolarWinds and Exchange server compromises. First, integrating private sector partners at the executive and tactical levels. The active private sector involvement resulted in an expedited Microsoft one-click tool to simplify and accelerate victims' patching and cleanup efforts and direct sharing of relevant information. This type of partnership sets precedent for future engagements on significant cyber incidents. Second, CISA created and utilized a methodology to track trends in patching and exposed Exchange servers that enabled the UCG to quantify the scope of the incident. Third, through industry relationships and leveraging legal authorities, the FBI and DOJ quickly identified the scale of the incidents. In the SolarWinds UCG, for example, scoping from a worst case of 16,800 to fewer than 100 targeted exploited non-government entities. This enabled focused victim engagement and improved understanding of what the perpetrators targeted from the larger set of exposed entities. And finally, NSA and CISA released cybersecurity advisories that detailed adversary techniques and provided mitigation for system owners. NSA also provided guidance to other U.S. military and intelligence organizations, as well as contractors in the defense industrial base. Fleet Street has been barking at New Zealand, arguing that Wellington has decided to stiff the other Four Eyes in order to pursue closer relations with China. That's according to a representative article from The Telegraph. New Zealand's Foreign Affairs Minister Nananya Mahuta, News Hub says, is simply concerned about the possibility of the Five Eyes' remit being extended beyond security, and that it declines to fully align itself with the other eyes' interest in cooperating on the strategic containment of Beijing. And finally, hey everybody, your air fryer is trying to kill you. Maybe. So you're trying to cook healthy since there are no trans fats in, like, air. And after all, who among us shouldn't be trying to up their game health-wise? And all of a sudden, blammo, the appliances are all conspiring against you. All right, maybe we're exaggerating a bit. Anywho, researchers at Cisco Talos have found remote code execution vulnerabilities in the Kosori Smart Air Fryer. Talos describes the Smart Air Fryer as a Wi-Fi-enabled kitchen appliance that cooks food with a variety of methods and settings. Users can also use the device's Wi-Fi features to start and stop cooking, look up recipe guides, and monitor cooking status. The model Talos tested is the Kosori Smart 5.8-quart air fryer, version 1.1, and the researchers say it could be exploited by sending a specially crafted packet to the device that contains a unique JSON object, which would allow them to execute arbitrary code. Tim Erlin, VP Product Management and Strategy at Tripwire, emailed us to say that, sure, there seems something risible about finding risk in a smart air fryer, but like other Wi-Fi-enabled smart IoT devices, things like this come with problems. Erlin wrote, quote, "It can seem like it's worth a laugh when vulnerabilities are found in these network-connected smart devices, but the increasing ubiquity of connected devices combined with vulnerabilities like these increasingly creates an attack surface with real risk," end quote. As Willie Sutton followed the money, so too will threat actors follow the new technology. Erlin goes on and says, quote, "We've seen that with mobile devices, with cloud, and we'll see it with IoT as well. Your air fryer or light bulbs might not be that interesting in and of themselves, but they could provide a point of entry to other devices on the network," end quote. So, you try to shrink your waistline, and you wind up expanding your attack surface. Go figure. We often discuss how cybersecurity is tied to reputational security, how being the victim of a data breach or ransomware event could affect how people trust your organization. But what about the reputational damage that comes from communications, either internally or public-facing? There are long-used terms in tech that have, for good reason, fallen out of favor, like blacklist or master versus slave hard drives. May Habib is CEO of Writer, a company that's developed an AI writing assistant. It's kind of like spell check or grammar check, but it also knows your company's rules and style guide and can remind you when you might just be getting yourself into a little hot water.
So we started as a very engineering-focused technology company with a tool for strings management. So basically what that means is in software, there is user-facing content and copy. It's pretty hard to access. And we made it very easy for engineers to basically give content people, you know, a file of all of that content that they could then edit, and it synced back to engineering. And we started automating some of those types of suggestions that would be made, because if you want to change username to handle or backwards the other way, you kind of want to do that in a lot of different places. And the AI really grew out of that. And we added a lot more functionality around automatically making content a certain way and doing that as a team. So, you know, if I am writing for a sixth grade reading level, having everybody who's working on content write to that same reading level. And over time, we really built the ability to do that for longer form content. And today, most of our customers are using Writer for product content, customer knowledge base content, and marketing blog posts and product marketing.
What can you tell us about the security side of things? I mean, I'm sure there are folks who are get nervous about, you know, having things run through the browser, of having their the writing that their folks are doing being sent through someone else's system. How do you contend with that?
It's a great question. So we are in a lot of sensitive places. So if you are a professional services firm and you want all your proposals to your end clients to be perfect, you want writer in there perfecting folks' writing. But, you know, you may also be delivering an audit report that's got very sensitive information. And so we actually, we're grounds up built for that use case as a B2B product. So there are a couple of things that are really differentiating here. Number one, we're not saving anyone's data. So that proposal never actually hits a writer server. And because of that, you've got number two, which is we're not using customer data to train our machine learning models. And that's, you know, absolutely pretty differentiating, because for most customers, for most products out there, you are the product. And, you know, anything you write in a browser per their terms of service is fair game for training materials. And, you know, it will be stripped of personally identifying information if you're lucky. But, you know, your data is still in somebody else's machine. And, you know, that's just not something that we do. It does mean, you know, a huge effort on our part to build our own proprietary data sets that look and feel, you know, similar to our target audience. But we're not looking at what people are doing. We're not even saving that in order to build those models.
That's May Habib from Writer.
Don't struggle to align your organization's cybersecurity with business risk. Get the only solution that goes beyond reacting to threats with vulnerability and risk monitoring. You need the next evolution of MDR, and only Critical Start delivers it. Critical Start doesn't just monitor and respond to threats. They put you in control by detecting suspicious activities, quickly responding to contain threats, and identifying your most critical assets and protecting them against vulnerabilities and exposures. With continuous visibility, expert guidance, and measurable risk reduction, Critical Start has redefined what it means to manage cyber risk. Demonstrate provable security maturity to your leadership while positioning your program to achieve the greatest risk reduction per dollar spent. Stop fearing risk and start managing it with Critical Start. Visit CriticalStart.com and request a demo today. That's CriticalStart.com.
And joining me once again is Ben Yellen. He's from the University of Maryland Center for Health and Homeland Security, and also my co-host over on the Caveat podcast. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Dave.
So we recently had news of the FBI. This is through some announcements from the Justice Department and elsewhere, getting a warrant to reach out and touch some Microsoft Exchange servers. Remove some web shells here. This is certainly when news broke of this. This caused some raised eyebrows around the cybersecurity community. I wanted to touch base with you from a law and policy point of view. What's your reaction here, Ben?
So I can certainly understand why it raised eyebrows. You have law enforcement gaining access to people's devices without those people knowing that law enforcement has gained access to their devices. Right. But I think that law enforcement in this case does have a proper justification. And the process they used to enable this access is a legal process prescribed by Justice Department rules. So just to give a little bit of background, as everybody knows, we had this big hack, suspected to be from Chinese hackers, of Microsoft Exchange servers across the country. Microsoft has recommended in response to this hack that people install the latest security patches. For whatever reason, there are people across the country, maybe you don't have the type of institutional knowledge we do and our listeners have, that they would just decide or you know, not know to download that security patch.
Yeah.
So the FBI was given approval by a magistrate, federal magistrate, to remove web shells left by hackers on hundreds of devices all across the country. And this is obviously a very proactive step that law enforcement is taking. It's a way of responding to this hack beyond just prosecuting the people that we think are responsible. And this, they're able to do this because a few years ago, the Justice Department was able to pass an administrative rule internally where you could have a federal magistrate authorize a warrant for devices all across the country. And one of the justifications for doing so would be if there were devices in five or more states that were compromised by some sort of computer crime, as has happened here. So they did get that approval from the judge, and the FBI followed through and accessed people's Microsoft Exchange servers. So obviously, I can understand why this rubs people the wrong way. It's the government getting access to our devices without our consent. But this is a legal process, and you know the purpose for conducting this operation certainly is to protect the rest of the country from the effects of this Microsoft Exchange hack.
And I suppose we should take comfort here that they did have to go get a warrant?
Right. I mean, this runs contrast to some other circumstances we talk about, particularly in the name of national security, where the FBI uses warrantless authorities. Maybe instead they obtain an administrative subpoena, which is a you have to have a lesser standard to obtain such a subpoena. Maybe they're using some of our post 9/11 surveillance authorities where they really don't need any judicial approval to gain access to somebody's personal devices. So I think we can take some comfort here that this is a process. There is judicial review. It's not just the FBI arbitrarily deciding to enter to go into people's devices arbitrarily. This is part of a Justice Department process. So I think that has to be, even though I can understand why the story rubs people the wrong way, I think it has to be understood in that context.
Yeah. Interesting, too, in the press release from the DOJ, they're making the point that the FBI is making a good faith effort to reach out to everyone whose servers they have accessed here, so, you know, basically sending them a heads up email.
Hey, guess what? Yeah.
Which reminds me, we talked about this on Caveat, reminds me of the little note you get in your luggage from TSA, you know, when they've searched something.
I kind of have the same reaction that I have when I get those TSA notices where it's like, okay, you already looked in my bag. I mean, there's not much I can do about it now.
Yeah.
I guess that's a consequence of flying. You know, it might be a little different here because, you know, I think you assume a certain level of risk that your stuff is going to be searched when you decide to fly on an airplane. You know, I guess by owning a device in this country and by using Microsoft Exchange servers, you are also assuming a type of risk. I don't think that risk, I don't think this authority is very well known to people. So, you know, I think this is not a risk that most people knew they were taking on. Perhaps now the story is out, more people are going to recognize this risk.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, the FBI is still investigating this. They also make the point that if you feel as though you've been compromised in this Exchange server incident, the FBI would like to hear from you so they can add that to their investigation. Every little bit of evidence helps. So
yeah, just give them your social security, your mother's maiden name. Yeah.
Now, Ben. Oh, so cynical, Ben. So cynical.
I know. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, Ben Yellen, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Peru Prakash, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
And now a word from our sponsor, SpyCloud, the leader in operationalizing cybercrime analytics. Traditional threat intelligence is a thing of the past. Cyber criminals are stealing vast amounts of credentials, session cookies, and financial data every day, and it's hard to keep up. SpyCloud is the trusted partner businesses turn to fully understand their darknet exposure risk and neutralize threats before it's too late. SpyCloud alerts your organization as soon as an employee or customer's data appears on the darknet, so you can act faster than bad actors to prevent cyber attacks like ransomware, session hijacking, account takeover, and online fraud. With insights from the industry's largest repository of recaptured data, protect the digital identities and systems most important to your business. Get your free corporate darknet exposure report at spycloud.com/cyberwire and see what information criminals have in their hands today. That's spycloud.com/cyberwire.